sometimes you need to have the courage to do whatever it is that has to be done, even if it feels unkind. Welcome to the Grow Time Business Devo, where we explore God's principles for living a high-performance life. And my name is Ken. And today we're going to be in the story of David and Goliath. And I've always loved this story. And I'm going to read most of the story, and then I've got a few things to pull out. But I think this story is so powerful. There's so many things for people like us. There's so many things for high performers. There's so many things for people who are maybe facing really challenging circumstances. And then you ask yourself the question, how should I act in those challenging circumstances? What traits should I have? I think the story of David and Goliath, and specifically David, has some really good takeaways for that. And so I'm going to skip through some sections, but I'll just start at the top, because the top of this story describes how challenging the situation is, okay? And so it says, this is 1 Samuel 17. I'm going to start in verse 2. And Saul and the men of Israel were gathered together, and they encamped in the valley of Elah, and drew up in battle array against the Philistines. The Philistines stood on a mountain on one side, and Israel stood on a mountain on the other side, with a valley between them. And a champion went out from the camp of the Philistines named Goliath from Gath, whose height was 6 cubits and a span. I believe that was almost 10 feet. So he's a big guy. He had a bronze helmet on his head, and he was armed with a coat of mail. And the weight of the coat was 5,000 shekels of bronze. And he had bronze armor on his legs and a bronze javelin between his shoulders. Now the staff of his spear was like a weaver's beam. And his iron spearhead weighed 600 shekels. And a shield bearer went before him. Then he stood and cried out to the armies of Israel. He said to them, "Why have you come out to line up for battle? Am I not a Philistine? And you the servants of Saul? Choose a man for yourselves, and let him come down to me. If he's able to fight with me and kill me, then we'll be your servants. But if I prevail against him and kill him, then you shall be our servants and serve us." And the Philistine said, "I defy the armies of Israel this day. Give me a man that we may fight together." When Saul and all Israel heard these words of the Philistine, they were dismayed and greatly afraid. So there's this picture of this massively intimidating figure. And not only is he intimidating, but he's coming to oppress, and he's challenging and speaking really intimidating words that's creating fear in the armies, in the other side. And these are the armies of God, right? These are the armies that are supposed to be, they've done all these amazing things. They've gone through all these other countries. They've got so much winning under their belt, yet they're still very afraid of this person. And they're not only afraid of the armies, but they're afraid of this one person, Goliath. And what he's doing is he's actually challenging them, and he's making fun of them. And simply, all they have to do is have one battle. And he's so confident that he's going to win that he's like, if you kill me, then we'll be your servants. So it says in verse 20, "So David arose early in the morning, left the sheep with a keeper, and took the things that went as Jesse had commanded him." That's his father. "And he came to the camp as the army was going out to the fight and shouting for battle. For Israel and the Philistines had drawn up in a battle array, army against army. So they're getting ready to fight. And David left his supplies in the hand of the supply keeper, ran to the army, and came and greeted his brothers. Then as he talked with them, there was the champion, the Philistine of Gath, Goliath by name, coming up from the armies of the Philistines. And he spoke according to the same words." So Goliath basically comes out again and says all the same words that he said before, right? "Send me someone to fight me. And if he kills me, we'll be your servants," et cetera, et cetera. Okay. "So David heard them, and all the men of Israel, when they saw the man, fled from him and were dreadfully afraid. So the men of Israel said, "Have you seen this man who has come up? Surely he has come up to defy Israel. And it shall be that the man who kills him, the king, will enrich with great riches, will give him his daughter, and give him his father's and give his father's house exemption from taxes in Israel." So this is the reward. So Saul's basically given a reward. He said, look, if anyone goes and kills Goliath, this is what you're going to get, right? You're going to be enriched with great riches. You're going to get my daughter to marry, and you're going to be exempt from all taxes. That's probably the biggest benefit. All right, so David hears this, right? Right. And so then it says, then David spoke to the men who stood by him saying, "What shall be done for the man who kills this Philistine and takes away the reproach from Israel? For who is this Philistine that he should defy the armies of the living God?" So what's interesting here is David's like, wait, what? What does the person who does this get? He's clearly drawn to the reward, which I think is an interesting takeaway. It's one of my takeaways, right? And then he's surprised that anyone is scared to go against this person who's defying his God, the armies of the living God, right? Because he has such great belief, such powerful belief that he can't even believe that anyone wouldn't go and fight this person because you've got God on your side. Verse 27, and the people answered him in this manner saying, "So shall it be done for the man who kills him." Like, yes, this is what's going to get to be given to that person. Now Eliab, his oldest brother, heard when he spoke to the men, and his anger was aroused against David. And he said, "Why do you come down here? And with whom have you left those few sheep in the wilderness? I know your pride and insolence of your heart and the insolence of your heart, for you've come down to see the battle." So I guess David has always had this spunk inside of him, and his older brother's upset at him, saying, look, you shouldn't be here. And he probably thinks he's going to get hurt or killed or something like that. And he might even think David is crazy enough to challenge this guy, right? So that's interesting. And David said, "What have I done now? Is there not a cause?" And he turned from him toward another and said the same thing. And these people answered him as the first ones did. So he asks again for confirmation on the reward a third time. And those people then confirm that reward, confirm it. All right. Then David said to Saul, "Let no man's heart fail because of him. Your servant," this is David, "will go and fight this Philistine." And Saul said to David, "You're not able to go fight this Philistine, for you're a youth, and he's a man of war from his youth." But David said to Saul, "Your servant used to keep his father's sheep, and when a lion or bear came and took a lamb out of the flock, I went after it and I struck it and delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. The servant killed both lion and bear, and this Philistine will be like one of them, seeing he has defied the armies of the living God. For moreover," David said, "the Lord who delivered me from the paw of the lion and from the paw of the bear, he will deliver me from the hand of the Philistine." And Saul said to David, "Okay, go and the Lord be with you." So that's interesting. David convinced him immediately. Like, it probably wasn't pretty too hard. He was probably the only person that was asking to go fight this person. All right, verse 38. So Saul clothed David with his armor, and he put a bronze helmet on his head, and he also clothed him with a coat of mail. David fastened his sword to his armor and tried to walk, for he had not tested them. And David said to Saul, "I cannot walk with these, for I've not tested them. I haven't been to battle with them. I haven't been able to fight with them." So David took them off. Then he took his staff in his hand, and he chose for himself 5 smooth stones from the brook and put them in his shepherd bag in a pouch which he had. And his sling was in his hand, and he drew near to the Philistine. So David goes through all this preparation. He tries on the armor, and then he just ditches the armor and he goes with the tools that he knows are tried and true, the things that he is comfortable with. So now he approaches Goliath. So the Philistine came and began drawing near to David, and the man who bore the shield went with him. And when the Philistine looked about and saw David, he disdained him, for he was only a youth, ruddy and good looking. It's funny that that's part of the description here. It's almost as if, so clearly Goliath was not ruddy and good looking. Verse 43. So the Philistine said to David, "Am I a dog that you come at me with sticks?" And the Philistine cursed David by his gods. And the Philistine said to David, "Come to me, and I will give your flesh to the birds of the air and the beasts of the field." Then David said to the Philistine, "You come to me with a sword, with a spear, and with a javelin, but I come to you in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom you have defied. This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you and take your head from you. And this day I will give the carcass of the camp of the Philistines to the birds of the air and the wild beasts of the earth, that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel. Then all this assembly shall know that the Lord does not save with the sword and the spear, for the battle is the Lord's, and he will give you into our hands." So that's funny. Goliath thinks he's going to intimidate David with the words that he uses. And David comes right back, is not shaken at all, and boldly shoots it right back. I think most people in that situation might actually start to get intimidated. Maybe David was feeling intimidated, but he definitely didn't act like it. Verse 48. So it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, that David hurried and ran toward the army to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone, and he slung it and struck the Philistine in the forehead, so that the stone sank into his forehead and he fell on his face to the earth. So David prevailed over the Philistine with a sling and a stone and struck the Philistine and killed him. And there was no sword in the hand of David. Verse 51, therefore David ran and stood over the Philistine, took his sword, that's Goliath's sword, and drew it out of its sheath and killed him and cut off his head with it. And when the Philistines saw that that their champion was dead, they all fled. Now when the man of Israel and Judah arose and shouted and pursued the Philistines as far as the entrance of the valley and to the gates of Ekron, and the wounded of the Philistine fell along the road of Shoreim, even as far as Gath and Ekron, then the children of Israel returned from chasing the Philistines, and they plundered their tents. Then David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent. I'll just read this last verse and then I'll mention a few things. When Saul saw David going out against the Philistine, he said to Abner, the commander of his army, "Abner, whose son is this?" And Abner said, "As your soul lives, O king, I do not know." All right. That was a long passage. I know I read a lot there. It is so powerful though. Like, the descriptions in this story are so important. There's just so much goodness inside of this. So I want to pull out just a few things as applicable for people like ourselves, right? For business owners, for high-performance individuals, for entrepreneurs, for leaders, for people that have to go conquer giants, right? And that sounds cliche, but like for people that literally are going and conquering giants. Or maybe, I spoke last Devo about people who are intimidating you, right? The evil people who are intimidating you. It's interesting how this is the next Devo, and this is an evil person intimidating the armies of God. And if you are in line with God's mission for you, then I would say you're like the armies of God, right? And you shouldn't be intimidated by evil people. And that's the perspective I'm coming at this from today, is if you are in line with God's mission for your life and you are pursuing something, I believe you are the armies of God and you should not be intimidated by evil people. And let's look at how David deals with being intimidated by an evil person. All right, the first thing, this is sort of a side comment, but I think it's important because it's very interesting that it's in this story. This has to do with Christians thinking that riches are bad. A lot of Christians have problems with money and riches. And the truth is we want God's people to have the money. It's better for God's people to have the money than the evil people to have the money, right? And the truth is, or throughout the Bible, it says so many times how the riches and the goodness and the good things are for God's people. And so I wanted to emphasize this one fact. I think it's very interesting. Then verse 25, David comes, they tell him what the reward is, right? It shall be that the man who kills him, the king will enrich with great riches. If riches were bad, then why would David want them? Why would God say David is a man after his own heart? If riches were bad, he will give him his daughter and he will be exempt from taxes. David asks a second person, wait. What should be done for the man who kills this Philistine, right? And then he asks a third person. I'm not suggesting that David did this for the money, but I am suggesting that that was part of it. It says it right here. David was clearly intrigued by it. He was paid well, and he surely collected on that payment. I would argue that many good deeds are not good deeds unless you're paid for them, because part of the good deed is often the other person or the other side actually paying something for it. All right, so I won't get into that. That's a whole nother thing. But that is something that I thought was very interesting here. David was paid for what he did. The reward was a contributing factor to his desire. David was someone who desired great things. And that is part of it. The other thing to note here is that Goliath was the opportunity for David. It was the opportunity for him to collect on this reward, and it was the opportunity for him to do all the future things that he did. Goliath was actually, it sounds cliche, right? Because people say it and don't really mean it all the time. But Goliath was actually a benefit. It was an opportunity given to David, right? To do something great. I'm sure these riches changed his life and his family's life. And also this set him up for the next stage of his life, which was a big one. And killing Goliath gave him massive confidence. I would say the act of killing Goliath was probably one of the things, if not the thing, that allowed him to be a successful king. How many times did he think back to that story? I mean, he talks about the stories about killing the lions and the bears, which are also, by the way, pretty dangerous creatures, okay? But that's nothing compared to Goliath. And he's talking about killing lions and bears right here. In his future, how often do you think he referred back to the time when he killed Goliath, when he was in a challenging circumstance that he was concerned and he was worried about? I'm guessing that happened pretty often. The next thing is, verse 34, David had courage. All right. And so your servant used to keep his father's sheep. And when a lion and a bear came and took the lamb out of the flock, I went after it. I struck it. I delivered the lamb from its mouth. And when it arose against me, I caught it by its beard and struck it and killed it. Isn't that like, I mean, how... How much courage do you have to be able to not only kill, he didn't kill a lion to defend himself. He went after the lion because of a lamb, which most of us would be like, take the lamb. I got the other lambs and I don't want to get killed by a lion, right? It's notable how much courage David had. And what's interesting is that his strength and his successes come from this massive belief in who he is and who God is, right? And that is the key to his courage. I've used this phrase before, owning your greatness. He owned his greatness really, really well. He knew what he was, what he could do, his talents. He didn't sit there and pray and wait for God to strike the lion down with some miracle fire ball from heaven, right? He went and killed the lion because he knew that he was capable of killing the lion. He trained, I'm sure, to kill the lion. And he also trusted in who God had made him to be and who God was to actually give him the upper hand in those situations. Courage is so critical in leading. Courage is not no fear. Courage is moving forward despite fear. I'm sure David was scared when the first time he killed the lion, maybe not the second and third time, I don't know. But he was certainly scared, but he did it anyway. And leaders have to have courage. The other thing that's interesting is he was quoting his highlight reel. Go back and watch a video where I've broken down something called a highlight reel. Or I think it was a past Devo. A highlight reel is when you write down all the things that God does in your life, all the massive opportunities and wins and all the events, and you write them down and you remember them. Because when you come up against the next challenge, you look back at those and you refer to them just like David did. And he's like, I can kill Goliath because I killed the lion. He had a highlight reel. A highlight reel is so important. Verse 39, he was comfortable and knew exactly what he needed to do. He didn't worry about what others were doing. I think this is really important for us entrepreneurs. We get caught up in what all other people are doing. So verse 39, that's where David tries on Saul's armor and he decides it's not right for him. It doesn't fit him. He hasn't tried it before. So he takes it all off and he goes back to just his sling and his pouch of stones and his shepherd's staff. And I think it's notable that he knew his tool set and he knew who he was. He was confident in who he was and his identity. And he wasn't trying to be somebody else. I think with us entrepreneurs, we're always like looking around and seeing like, oh, this person's doing it this way. Oh, this person's doing it this way. You know, I coach all these different business owners and the ones that are focused on their lane and just know how they win, like their way of winning, like they're the ones that win. The ones that are constantly changing and adjusting and pivoting because they see all these different people doing different things in different ways and supposedly having different success. Like that often is what creates a lot of expense, a lot of chaos, and eventually you end up not winning. And so David was comfortable in who he was and how he was going to do it his way. And he believed in it. I think that's really important. The next thing in verse 42 here, right? Goliath was mocking him, right? He was underestimating him. And underestimation of David was David's advantage. And sometimes I think we feel like we don't have everything else that everyone else has. I don't have enough as much money someone else has. I don't have the team that somebody else has. I'm not the same age. I don't have the same skill set. I'm not good at this or that, whatever. And the truth is that sometimes those things are our advantage. Like Goliath underestimating David is probably what killed Goliath. And on the flip side, Goliath's pride is what probably killed Goliath, right? That dichotomy, those two things put together, that is why David killed Goliath, because Goliath was underestimating him. And he thought, there's no way this boy can actually kill me. And then he did. The next notable thing here is that David had absolute confidence. He didn't waver. So when Goliath started spewing all these insults at him and cursing him and trying to intimidate him with words and all these different things, David was unshaken. And how was he unshaken? It wasn't because he was bigger. It's because he had God on his side and he remembered how God delivered him from all these other situations. But I think that's important because when there are evil people in our lives intimidating us, I think sometimes that can shake you. Like sometimes you can hear that and you're like, oh, maybe that's true. Like with David, that didn't enter his mind at all. Here's the next takeaway that I have here, which I think is so important, is David acted fast. He took fast action. Verse 48. So it was when the Philistine arose and came and drew near to Dave to meet David. David hurried and ran toward the army. How many of us would run at the army, right? He ran towards the army to meet the Philistine. Then David put his hand in his bag. So this is as he's running. I'm picturing this. It's like slow motion matrix. He sticks his hand in his bag. He grabs the sling and the stone and he flings it at him, right? Mid run, he ran at the problem. He took fast action. If you notice throughout this entire story, David takes fast action, and fast action and fast decision making. I'm not talking about unwise action. I'm talking about when you're supposed to act, you act. There's no procrastination, right? Procrastination is really just fear creeping in and worry creeping in. And David had rid that, but he makes quick decisions. When he enters the camp, he hears the reward. He sees Goliath. He makes a quick decision that I'm the one that's going to go battle this guy. He makes a quick decision about the armor. He doesn't take days to train and fight in the armor. He makes quick decisions about when he sees Goliath, he attacks him. And he runs fast at him. Fast action, quick decisions is critical. Here's one that I think some of us may have be uncomfortable with. Verse 51, after he struck him, David ran and stood over him. I love how this is written. And he took his sword. So he's standing over this giant, right? He took his sword, the giant's sword, and he stabbed him in his heart with it. And he cut off his head with it. There are going to be times where we need to do things that may seem unkind, but are the right things to do. You might say, well, God would have mercy on this person and et cetera, et cetera. No, not necessarily. He killed him twice, then he cut off his head. Then he took his head and brought it to Jerusalem. Like, this is brutal, and it's a good thing. Sometimes you need to have the courage to do whatever it is that has to be done, even if it feels uncomfortable, even if it feels unkind. And that takes a lot of discernment and wisdom. But I think in our world, sometimes when we're dealing with evil people who are attacking, we sometimes are not willing to do what is necessary to eradicate the threat when that has to happen. Now, it's very different. It wasn't done in anger here. It wasn't done out of vindication. Those are different emotions. But when there is something that needs to be done, and you just need to have the courage to do it, it's important. It's important to know what it is that you need to do and be able to carry that all the way through. If he hadn't killed Goliath, and he you know, just not kindly let him go because he had, quote, beaten him, that he would have come back. He would have been stronger and smarter. Okay? So he did what needed to be done. Then his actions, those actions brought courage to the rest of the people. And as a leader, I think that's important. Your actions, if you act weak or timid, your people are going to be weak and timid. And that doesn't mean be an evil conqueror. That's not at all what it means, obviously. But if you have courage, then you'll bring courage to other people, right? So then David's courage meant that all the rest of the Israelites army, the whole army, went and attacked and drove the Philistines out and plundered and eradicated them, right? His actions brought courage to the rest of them. And then lastly here, at verse 55, when Saul asks Abner, his commander, who this person is. Abner's like, I have no idea. David came out of obscurity and he didn't have any of the benefits that these other people have, at least on paper. I think that's encouraging to a lot of us because a lot of us come out of obscurity, right? And we feel like we're supposed to be doing something really great. We might be the one in the family line that changes the trajectory. And that was David here. Like he came out of obscurity and became the greatest king, right? The king after God's own heart. The king that then Jesus came from that bloodline. Like that became David. And so I think that's encouraging for a lot of people who are coming out of obscurity, but have the boldness to believe that what they're supposed to be doing is this great thing. And that may sound silly, it may seem silly to a lot of people, but I think that's interesting that's coming from here. And so let me ask you a few questions in closing. Like, are you being timid or indecisive or do you have fear in your heart about something that you're supposed to be doing? Or maybe someone that is, there's a giant in front of you, maybe it's a situation, but maybe it's an actual person attacking you, right? Like that happens. I talked about that in the last Devo of Psalm 37. If that's the case, like maybe you have to go and find the fire, and maybe you need to develop your highlight reel and do some of these things that David did. Is fear keeping you from taking massive action? Like when you know what you're supposed to be doing, are you procrastinating? I've done this whole series on procrastination and some of the fears, and it's really not fear, it's really more like anxiety that are keeping you potentially from actually doing anything, so you're just staying stuck. Is there anxiety, fear, worry that's keeping you from taking massive action? And what would it look like to find the identity, the who you are and the whose you are, right? Who God made you with all your talents and all those and the things, what you're supposed to be doing, and then that he's backing you. What would it look like to find that and then own your greatness? Owning your greatness is knowing whose you are and who you are, right? Like who God made you and also where you came from. That's owning your greatness. I think that if you could do that, that maybe you'd be a more successful leader. Maybe you'd actually be further down the path of whatever it is you're pursuing. And so I hope this was helpful today. I hope this really inspired you. This story is an inspiring story. So I hope it inspired you to live a more successful, high performing, and God honoring life. If you'd like to learn more about the Business Devo, you can go to bizdevo.com. That's bizdevo.com. And you can get these in your inbox or text it to you daily. If you'd like to learn more about me, you can visit kenott.com. That's kenott.com. Thanks. And until next time, never stop growing.